If you'll be moving your Bibles to Mark, the 14th chapter, Mark chapter 14. I'm going to read a text from there in just a few moments. So good to be with you tonight. And so good that you've taken the time and prepared to be here. If you're visiting with us, we're glad that you are concerned with spiritual things and you want to honor God in your life. We'd love to spend some more time talking to you about that. If you're from the community and you want to know more about us, please feel free to ask any questions that you may have. Let's get into the study of God's Word this evening. I want to begin looking at this text in Mark chapter 14, beginning in verse 26. And I want to read a rather lengthy period of text here and get sort of the context of what's going on in these last moments of Jesus' life. And in particular, pick up on a phrase that is toward the end of our reading dealing with the life of Peter. We've been doing a class on Wednesday nights about the life of Peter, about his character. It's been really interesting, and I think there's some things we can gain from some of the things that we learn about Peter and his interactions with Jesus throughout his life, and in particular tonight, in these final scenes in the garden and as Jesus is being led away to be crucified. Beginning in verse 26, this is Mark 14 and verse 26, it says, "After singing a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives, and Jesus said to them, 'You will all fall away, because it is written, I will strike down the shepherd, and the sheep shall be scattered. But after I have been raised, I will go ahead of you to Galilee.' But Peter said to him, 'Even though all may fall away, yet I will not.' And Jesus said to him, 'Truly I say to you, that this very night, before a rooster crows twice, you yourself will deny me three times.' But Peter kept saying insistently, 'Even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you.' And they were all saying the same thing also. They came to a place named Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, 'Sit here until I have prayed.' And he took with him Peter and James and John and began to be very distressed and troubled. And he said to them, 'My soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and keep watch.' And he went a little beyond them and fell to the ground and began to pray that if it were possible, the hour might pass him by. And as he was saying, 'Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Remove this cup from me, yet not what I will, but what you will.' And he came and found them sleeping and said to Peter, 'Simon, are you asleep? Could you not keep watch for 1 hour? Keep watching and praying that you may not come into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak.' And again, he went away and prayed, saying the same words. And again, he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were very heavy, and they did not know what to answer him. And he came the third time and said to them, 'Are you still sleeping and resting? It is enough. The hour has come. Behold, the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up, let us be going. Behold, the one who betrays me is at hand.' Immediately, while he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, came up, accompanied by a crowd with swords and clubs, who were from the chief priests and the scribes and the elders. Now, he who was betraying him had given them a signal, saying, 'Whomever I kiss, he is the one. Seize him and lead him away under guard.' After coming, Judas immediately went to him, saying, 'Rabbi,' and kissed him. And they laid hands on him and seized him. But one of those who stood by drew his sword and struck the slave of the high priest and cut off his ear. And Jesus said to them, 'Have you come out with swords and clubs to arrest me as you would against a robber? Every day I was with you in the temple teaching, and you did not seize me. But this has taken place to fulfill the scriptures.' And they all left him and fled. A young man was following him, wearing nothing but a linen sheet over his naked body, and they seized him. But he pulled free of the linen sheet and escaped naked. They led Jesus away to the high priest, and all the chief priests and the elders and the scribes gathered together. But Peter had followed him at a distance, right into the courtyard of the high priest. He was sitting with the officers and warming himself at the fire." And talking to Jeff before this morning, I didn't really think that our sermons necessarily went together so much, but after listening to Jeff preach this morning, I decided that they actually mesh quite well, because what I want to talk about tonight is that last phrase about Peter, and really the contrast of that phrase compared to how Peter reacted and declared his faith to Jesus earlier in the evening. This setting comes in the Passover meal. They prepare the Passover, and they're meeting with Jesus. The 12 have come before him. And Jesus says, one of you is going to betray. And Judas then goes out. And then they go, and they sing this hymn. And they go out to the Mount of Olives, and Jesus is there with the 11, speaking to them. And Peter at this point gets very emphatic about his faith. Jesus says, you're all going to scatter. The shepherd is going to be killed, is going to strike the shepherd, and the sheep are going to scatter. And Peter says, no, Lord. He's done this before, remember. He rebukes Jesus when he predicts his own death just after the confession of the reality that he is the Lord's Christ. But he says, no, Lord, that's not going to be the case. I will never deny you. I will go with you even to death. And I want to impress upon our minds tonight the contrast between what Peter does in the first part of this reading and where he's standing at the end. At the end, he's warming his hands by the fire within the courtyard, and he's following Jesus at a distance, Mark tells us. The man that twice earlier emphatically tells Jesus, I will follow you even to death. When the time came, he's not following him even to death. He's following at a distance from Jesus. Really, as we're reading through these stories, particularly in Mark, I believe it's highlighted the interaction with Peter. But it's done in all the Gospels, how Jesus and Peter are interacting as they're developing. He's developing his disciples, and he's developing Peter into what he is to become. And so we see this interaction where he is emphatically and insistently telling Jesus, I will always follow you. And we see him by Jesus' side at these various occasions. He's taking Peter and James and John up on the mountain of Transfiguration. This is right after the confession, or right after he's told them, I'm going to suffer and die. Then they're able to see his glory on this mountain. And then he brings them into Gethsemane, where they should be supporting Jesus and lifting him up in this weary time. He tells them he is grieved. He tells them he is distressed. He tells them he is trouble. He is deeply grieved in his soul. And yet while he's there praying, these three men, Peter specifically, who emphatically said he would stand by his side always, is falling asleep on the job. This is no mistake how Peter is portrayed here as Mark is revealing the story of how this all played out. That at one moment, Peter is telling Jesus, I'm with you forever. I've got your back. But now he's in the garden, and Jesus is deeply grieved, and Peter's drifting off to sleep. And then notice how Jesus responds to him in verse 38. I want us to keep this in mind throughout the evening. He says this in verse 38. Keep watching and praying that you may not come into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. We have such good intentions, don't we? Peter said, I'll never deny you. Even if I have to go to death, I will not deny you, Lord. I will be by your side. I'm going to stick with you through everything. The spirit is willing, Jesus says, but you better keep watching and praying because the flesh is weak. And so the scene sets up perfectly when Jesus is going to be arrested. He comes into the garden, and of course, Peter and James and John, they are there and they're sleeping. They're not keeping watch. They're not praying. They're not protecting themselves from entering into temptation. And so when the moment comes, and Judas comes and he betrays Jesus with a kiss, and Peter begins to fight, we know from another gospel, and he pulls his sword and he starts swinging, and Jesus tells him to put it up, and he doesn't understand why. Then they all flee because it doesn't make sense. And despite telling him before that they're going to be with him forever, exactly what Jesus said would happen, happened. He's taken into custody. And in that moment, in the moment of trial, they all scatter. They all leave. I think there are some really powerful things that we can gain from this story. Some lessons that we can see from this encounter with Jesus and his disciples. with those who are supposed to be following him. That's the idea of what a disciple is. They're to be following their master. They're to be doing the things that he is doing. And they're to be walking in his footsteps. But the reality is, when they don't understand fully what Jesus is after, when they don't totally comprehend the sort of message that Jesus is preaching, and throughout Mark, repeatedly it says, do you not understand? They're not getting it. They're not understanding, sometimes I think because they don't really want to get it. But it says they don't understand. And here's the reason why, I believe. It's because they want a kingdom and not a cross. They don't like the message of suffering. And here's the reality. Understand this, discipleship often means suffering prior to reward. Jesus preaches this message repeatedly. It is a part of what it means to follow him. That discipleship, what it means is suffering before reward. We're not going to just get the reward for nothing. And so we're going to live in a world that hates the master, that hates Jesus. He tells us that in John. And so he's going to hate the disciple too. He says, if the world hates me, it's going to hate you as well. This is not going to be something that's just easy. It's just going to come to you simply. And so three times he predicts his death to his disciples. Once in chapter 8, just after the great confession that he is the Christ of God. Once in chapter 9, these are easy to remember because it's 8:31, 9:31, and 10:31, just back to back to back. But again, in chapter 9 and 31, he predicts his death again to his disciples. And then in 10:31, he shows them that being great means being last, that he's going to suffer, that he's going to have to die, and that their focus on greatness is missing the point. Both of these last two, in chapter 9 and chapter 10, interestingly enough, it combines these two concepts. Jesus is predicting his death to his disciples, and they don't understand. And you know what comes next? Those stories where he begins to question them, and they're talking about who's greatest in the kingdom. You see how they're missing it? How their focus of what it means to be a disciple is totally different than what Jesus is trying to teach and portray. How they're not really understanding what discipleship is all about. And so Jesus is trying to bring them along. He's trying to help them understand. And in those moments where he's predicting his death and saying he's going to go up to Jerusalem, he's going to die, he's going to suffer, what they're thinking about is the glory of the kingdom. One of them, in fact, James and John, come to him right after this prediction of death, and they're requesting to sit on his right hand and his left hand in the kingdom. And that's what they're focused on. And he brings them back to reality and says, you will face the baptism with which I will have to deal. But it's not my place to give these positions of glory. And so the disciples are all about the kingdom. That they're all about the glory and the power and what's going to come from following Jesus and the reward that's going to come from that. But when Jesus begins to talk about death and suffering, they don't want to hear that. But when Jesus begins to talk about the struggles that are going to come and how the chief priests and those in positions of power are going to beat him and put him to death, and there's going to be some difficult times ahead, they don't want to hear about that. They don't want to understand. They're going to let their minds go back to the place they're comfortable. That is the reward, the glory, the position of power, in which Jesus has to regularly remind them is not, in fact, what discipleship is about. So as Peter is making these great claims and saying he's going to follow Jesus even to death, he has in his mind this kingdom, and so he's pulling out his sword and he's ready to fight for the Lord. That's not what it's about. Peter doesn't understand. He doesn't understand what he's later going to tell Pilate, that his kingdom is not of this realm. If it were, he would bring his people and they would fight. But he tells Peter to put the sword away. That's not his mission. That's not his goal. In fact, his goal is just the opposite. It is to die at the hands of sinful men, to then redeem all humanity. And then, of course, as you know, he's going to be resurrected from the dead by the glory and the power of the Father. And then all men are going to be drawn unto him. And this is what he's trying to help us under his disciples understand. It's what he wants them to see. But what they want to see is something very different. And so what we need to understand about discipleship is that true devotion is revealed through trial. And that we can say all day that we are disciples, or we can claim to follow Jesus, and that we can say, I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. I'm always going to stay by your side. I'm always going to be in this place. I'm always going to be with God's people. I'm always going to say Jesus is Lord, as Peter did. But the reality is, that's really easy when there's no struggle, when there's no fight, and when there's no suffering. And that's what Peter and the disciples found out. That as soon as the mob came with the clubs and the weapons, and they began to arrest Jesus, and things aren't going the way they thought they were going to go, this is not the emphatic Peter anymore. This is not the emphatic disciples, the insistent disciples that were always going to be with you. Now they're following Jesus at a distance. Even to the point at which we come to Peter there in the courtyard where he is at a distance from him, and people begin saying, Peter, aren't you with him? Aren't you one of these men? And of course, he denies him. Do you see the antithesis of this? Jesus, I will never leave you. I will follow you even to death. Now he's following at a distance. And as he's following at a distance, he's prepared to deny him three times. How closely am I following Jesus? As I'm reading through this text and I come across that phrase, I think I'm meant to think about that. As Mark tells me that Peter is there following at a distance after telling Jesus he would not leave him, I can't help but think that as a reader, I'm meant to come to that place in my own mind and ask, how closely am I following Jesus? Am I the kind of person who says, Jesus, I'm going to never leave you, but then when trial comes or when questions come and people begin to ask, I'm willing to deny? Is the reality that in truth I'm actually following him at a distance? I'm following him when it's comfortable. I'm following when it's easy. But when it becomes difficult, I'm going to go back to where it's comfortable. I'm going to find that safety zone. I'm going to find it where it's not so hard anymore. I'm not going to speak up and say what's really on my mind. And although I might claim to be a Jesus follower, and although I might claim to do what he tells me to do, and that I'm his disciple, in that moment, if I'm backing off from this, if I'm not really willing to stand up for him, the truth is I'm no different than Peter in this moment, where he's following him at a distance now. The brazen disciple, the one who's bold, the one who proclaims to Jesus' face, I will never leave you, I will die with you. But now, just moments later, he's keeping his distance from Jesus. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. That's what Jesus tells him. He says, you better keep watch. You better be praying that you don't enter into temptation, because the spirit is willing. We're willing. We're very bold often to say about how much we believe, but he says the flesh is weak. When the moment comes, when the trial is there, where will we be? Are we going to be warming our hands by the fire, keeping a safe distance? Are we going to be there with Jesus, proclaiming, as Peter had done moments before, that he is the Christ of God? True devotion is revealed during moments of trial. It's interesting when we think of the full story. If you begin reading through the Gospel of Mark and you see the sorts of things that are happening and what's going on with the disciples, they're often so similar to his opponents. The Gospel of Mark often presents the disciples in a very similar way to the rulers or to the Pharisees or to people who doubt. They don't understand his teaching. Sometimes they're treating people unfairly. They're focused on human thinking. Have you noticed that in the Gospels? It's showing the humanity of the disciples, that Jesus, he's walking about and children are trying to come to him. They say, hey, you don't bother Jesus. Jesus is too important. Children, go away. It's human sort of thinking. Or the woman in Mark 7. You're not an Israelite. You leave Jesus alone. You see how the disciples, they're pictured so often like the rulers. They don't really understand. They don't really believe Jesus about who he really is. They're not fully grasping this. But unlike the opponents, the disciples do not destroy Jesus to save their lives. They're not against Jesus. But here's the reality. Sometimes they fail at being for him. And those closest to Jesus seem to fail him the most. I think sometimes that's where we find ourselves. With the exception of Judas, who is trying to betray Jesus, he is trying to destroy him. The other disciples, they're not trying to destroy him. They just fail to be for him. They fail to stand up and say what needs to be said. And they fail to declare before all what they've told Jesus privately. And within their own comfortable company of people. And so in that moment where they have failed to keep watch, where they have failed to pray that they won't enter into temptation, when the spirit is willing, but they find the flesh is weak, it's not that they're actively trying to tear Jesus down, it's that they're just not for him in that moment. They're not standing up when they should stand up. Is that where I find myself? That's what I have to ask myself. Because that answers that question for me. Am I following Jesus at a distance? Am I willing to proclaim my Christianity on Facebook or on Twitter or to people within this building or others that we know are believers? But what about when we're in the presence of non-believers? What about when we're in the presence of people at work or people in our neighborhood or people who are around us who don't think the same way that we think? What is exposed then? What is the reality of who we are? Tell you what, for Peter, as Jesus is being led away, who he really is exposed in that moment. And when the moment fully hits him, he realizes it. And he goes away and he weeps bitterly. The Spirit is willing, he knows. But the flesh was weak. But I want us to understand something about this story. That we're not just left with the failure of Peter and the other disciples. I think we learn through this that discipleship means suffering before reward. I think we have to realize that discipleship is tested through trial, that we see these two realities, and what happens with the disciples, as they're called, is they fail this test. But here's another lesson that we need to learn tonight, and that is that there is hope. I have failed in my life. You have failed in your life. And when we look at ourselves and we think about what we've proclaimed and how bold we have been, but then we see the reality of our fleshly decisions and sometimes our human type of thinking, we can look to Peter, we can look to the other disciples, and we realize there is hope in this story. All is not lost. Because sometimes through failure, our faith is made stronger. And we learn in these moments of trial, even the times when we fail. Ways that we can do it differently. Areas that we need growth. Or maybe just how important it is to keep watch and pray. How vital it is to be brought to earth and realize that the spirit is willing but the flesh is weak. That I can say lots of things, that I can be bold, but when it comes down to it, what am I going to do in the moment? That's what's important. I believe Jesus leaves them with hope in this story. He leaves them in hope with the resurrection account. Just before this, where we began reading tonight in verse 28, as he had predicted his death, he tells them, after I have been raised, I will go ahead of you to Galilee. It is at this moment that Peter interjects and begins his emphatic statements about how he'll never deny Jesus. And of course, as the story unfolds, he in fact does that. But the last thing that Jesus says to him before he begins this path to his own demise is, I will go before you to Galilee. But I want you to notice chapter 16 in verse 7. When the women leave the tomb, what they are told to go tell Peter and the other disciples. He says, but go, tell his disciples and Peter that he, being Jesus, is going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him just as he told you. There's hope in that message. What he wants these women to tell Peter is the story is not over. You failed. You fled, just like Jesus told you you were going to. You denied him. And the moment in which you said you were going to stand for him, as you were going to stay by him, even to the point of death, you failed miserably. But now, there's a second part of this story. He's going before you to Galilee, and he wants you to go and to meet him there. And Jesus, did you know Jesus never gave up on Peter in this moment? Even in the midst of telling Peter he was going to deny him, in Luke 22 and verse 32, he tells Peter, I have prayed for you, for your faith, that when once you have returned, you will strengthen your brothers. He said, you're going to deny me. You're going to do it three times, but I've prayed for you that your faith will not fail you. And then when you've once turned back again, you go and you strengthen your brothers, Peter. I'll tell you something. I don't think that meant a whole lot to Peter in that moment. Peter was too determined in his spirit that he was never going to give up on Jesus. He was too bold in his thought of his own faith to consider what Jesus was saying, I think, in that moment. But now, when he's being told, you go before him to Galilee, you go and meet him there, I guarantee he's thinking about these moments with Jesus where Jesus predicted what was going to take place, and there is hope even through failure. And then, of course, when he meets him there in John 21, and he questions Peter three times and says, do you love me, Peter? Those three times that correspond to the three denials. As Peter's there warming his hands over the charcoal fire, as Jesus is asking this question, he's grieved in spirit that third time, knowing what's going on. But Jesus says this, he says, you go and you shepherd my sheep, Peter. All was not lost. And despite whatever failures I've had in my life or whatever the sins you've had in your life, all hope is not lost. Peter denied Jesus before other people. Can we think of something that is worse than that? Maybe Judas actually betraying him. We would see that as being worse. But there's nothing that is much worse than actually denying Jesus Christ before others. Especially from someone who had just proclaimed it so boldly to Jesus, that he is the Christ. What could be more heinous than that? That someone who is a believer who would then take that away and say, no, I am not with him. I'm not with that man. But Jesus still saw hope in Peter. And I don't know where you are tonight in your faith or what struggles you may have faced or what types of things you may have done or whether you're keeping your distance from Jesus, but I do know this, there is hope for you. All is not lost. Maybe you have even denied Jesus before other people. Maybe you have said, I don't believe in all that stuff. It's all superstition. I don't care about it. But you know that's not true. Even if that describes you perfectly, you're no different than Peter. And there's hope. you can return. And not only can you return, you can be like Peter. You can be strengthening others at some point. There is hope for you in your faith. And even in these failures, there can be a faith-building experience for you. You can be built up in your understanding of God, your understanding of Jesus, and what he means for you in your life. And if that wasn't true, you wouldn't even be here tonight. And so I want us to understand that what the gospel message about is bringing sinners back to God. And that is never shown more clearly than the stories that we read in Scripture, like Peter and the disciples who all fled from him. Maybe you have fled. Maybe you have turned your back in the moment of trial. But now it's time to turn again. Don't follow Jesus at a distance. The reality is that does no good. If you're going to follow him, then follow him all the way. If you're going to follow him, then put your whole self into it. Because to do anything else is just deceiving ourselves in it. If we're going to follow him, we better keep watch and we better be praying. And we better realize that the spirit is often willing, but the flesh is weak. And that's why we better be on top of things. We better be praying. We better be keeping watch of ourselves and not just make the statements and make the claims and proclaim, but live like a disciple. If you find yourself at odds with that tonight, if you realize you're not living right, whether you're already one who confessed the name of Jesus and you put on Christ, but you realize that's not the way you're living, or maybe you're one who realizes you haven't done that yet, you haven't been following him, and you know it's time to do so, we'd love to help you. We'd love to help you by means of what Scripture tells us to do. If you're not a Christian, you can be baptized into Christ tonight. If you are a Christian and you know you haven't been doing the right thing, it's time to make it right. You can pray. You can pray privately to God. You can go home and in the privacy of your own home, you can recommit yourself if you need encouragement. If you think this is something of a public nature that deems it necessary to come forward and make this known to us, we're more than willing to help even with that. Don't be ashamed. Peter denied Jesus. And Peter came back. Peter is an apostle. And we all sin. We all need encouragement. We all need to be strengthened.